This is Where We Meet, sharing conversations from New Mexico and beyond, a show of Taos Center for the Arts. I'm Alice Morillon. Taos Center for the Arts would like to recognize that it operates on the homelands of the Red Willow people of Taos Pueblo. We'd like to honor the ongoing dedication and importance of Native and Indigenous cultures within our community and within the land we live, learn, and exist on. Our guest today is Yvonne Montoya. Montoya is a New Mexican choreographer whose current work, Stories from Home, is grounded in her identity and her family stories. With her company, Sapphos, they presented workshops at the Wildflower Playhouse this past week in Taos. On Sunday, the 21st, they will present Stories from Home on TCA stage. In this intimate, vibrant conversation, Montoya talks of the aesthetic and uniqueness of New Mexico and how she incorporates them into her work. She shares the centrality of family in her life and creative endeavors. She reflects on the erasure of this region's history on a national scale and frames her work within this context. Yvonne, you're a choreographer, dancer, writer, speaker. Your work is based in Tucson, Arizona, and is overall very much grounded in this border region between the U.S. and Mexico. You're here in Taos this week and next week to teach workshops and present stories from home, both at the Wildflower Playhouse and at TCA. We're so glad that you're here and that you're able to share your work, especially because Stories from Home is very much grounded in New Mexico, and we'll go back to that in a little bit. You are the co-founder and lead choreographer of the dance company Sapphos. Over the years, you have worked with a large number of Southwest dancers and created a diversity of shows, and I'm looking forward to exploring more of these aspects of your work with you today. But I want to start off with the fact that you are from New Mexico. Your family has been living on this land for generations. Today, your identity as a Chicana woman from New Mexico informs the work that you are doing with Stories from Home. And my question is twofold. The first part is, what was it like for you to grow up in New Mexico? And what do you think those formative years do to inform the work that you do now?
Well, thank you so much, Alice, for having me here today. It's a joy speaking with you. That's a very deep and profound question. I feel growing up in New Mexico, being from New Mexico, it's who I am. It's the core of my being. It's my heart. It's my soul. It's my identity. I was raised in Albuquerque. My mom's family is from El Rancho in the Pauaque Valley and have been there for many, many generations, going back centuries. My dad's family is from Santa Fe. And his family has roots from all over the state, but had been in Santa Fe for a few generations prior to him being the first generation that was economically displaced from the city. And I think that I'm in a unique position because I grew up in Albuquerque and then I left at a young age. So I moved away at 18 to go to college. And it's when I left that I realized how unique and special New Mexico is, because there is really no place elsewhere like it. Tucson is a similar size city to Albuquerque, completely different, completely different. The food, the people, the warmth, the land, the connection to land, the mountains, the air. It's completely different. And so that's when I realized there was something unique and something special. And I missed home. I was homesick. And I wanted to dive deeper into what that was and kind of capture the essence of home in diaspora, being away from home. And then I started to move in like Latino spaces, right? And being from New Mexico, where these unique unicorns, because most the narratives around Latinidad are dominated by narratives of immigration. And as a Nuevo Mexicana, we're not immigrants, right? The border crossed us. So that it's unique and it's different. And so it made it even more important for me to capture home and bring it with me when I walk into spaces and to represent where I'm from, my land, my great grandma, my people. I was definitely in my artistic practice inspired by the aesthetics of New Mexico, the endless open blue skies, the colors, the dirt, the formica in the sand in, you know, the Pauke River that's dry most of the time where I used to play with my cousins when I was little. And I wanted to fold that into my contemporary dance practice, which was not what the contemporary aesthetics were at the time when I was coming up as a young choreographer. So figuring out how to navigate my voice in that space and how to bring in the aesthetics of home, because why not? There's Santa Fe style, you know, style. There's specific jewelry that's related to New Mexico. There's a food culture that's very specific to this region. We have New Mexico music on 89.1, at least in Albuquerque. I don't know what the station is up here. So where are the contemporary movement aesthetics of this region? How do I incorporate the dances my great grandparents used to do into my work to find my voice in this world as an artist? So that was a very abstract and nebulous description of how being from here shaped my journey, but that's just to scratch the surface.
I want to go back to the people you mentioned briefly, your family. I think Stories from Home spurred from your father passing away. And that's related to the question that came up for me reading your website. So on your website, there are four words that are used to describe you. It's choreographer, writer, speaker, and mother. And that last one, you know, stood out because it's not an artistic attribute or activity. It's something else. And I wonder if you could tell us, how does being a mother inform the work that you do and how overall family plays a role in your creative work?
That's a great question. And I was advised by some professional development people on the East Coast when I was doing a Kennedy Center Citizen Artists Fellowship to maybe remove that word. But I didn't because I think that the centrality of family is not only a cultural value, but I think part of my aesthetic. It's really important. Without our family and those connections, you know, who are we? I have a child, and Stories from Home, it's a collection of dances, but it is the link between my dad and his stories and passing through me to my son in the future generations. So it's the link between the past to the future. And because I want my son is growing up outside of New Mexico. He's being raised in Tucson. I want him to have the same sense of connection to this place, connection to his roots, a sense of identity and who he is, and a knowledge of his cadencia, even though he's not being raised here. And so how can I share that with him, even though he's not growing up? He's never been to a matanza, right? He's not growing up with these cultural practices. But how can I share that in this art form? So the centrality of family is really important to me because it's important. I think it's important to who I am as a normal Mexicana. I was really close to my great-grandmother. I lived with her for a summer during college as I did an internship at the Fray Angelico Chavez History Library in Santa Fe. And that was really formative because at the time I lived with her, she didn't speak English aside from a few words and phrases, and I didn't speak Spanish at the time. So I had to figure out how to communicate, and it really spurred me to learn the language because I realized I don't know her stories. I don't know her songs. I don't know her recipes. So much of my connection to my past was being lost with the loss of the Spanish language. So how can I recover that and dive deep, gather that information, and then share it with my child to help form his sense of identity and mine as well? Because getting to know her really, really grounded me. So I do see this work as a conduit, and family is central to me and my being and also to my aesthetic. So in terms of folding in family and motherhood in particular into my artistic practice, that's at the heart and core of Stories from Home. If you come to the performance on the 21st, you will see my son. He tours with the company. He is in the show. He will be joining me on stage. I thought it was important to include him, not only to spend time with him because now I'm on tour and I'm not around him. I'm gone for weeks at a time. But also, if I'm talking about family and I say it's from home, how can I not include my child in the piece? But prior to that, I had worked with him in two other capacities. The first project was in 2015. It was called the Motherhood and Performing Arts Project. And that started, it was there were three sections to that. There was a blog, a dance film, and a jewelry line that I made with recycled some of his toys. So I made a lot of earrings out of Legos and broken, not crayons, the colored pencils, made lots of earrings out of that. But that came out of the desires. I was with the company. We were, at the time, were in residency in the city of South Tucson and doing a lot of community-based work, which I love to do. But it drew me, it took me away from him. And I realized I was missing out on large chunks of his childhood because I was working so much, being embedded in a community. So two things happened to that. One, I said, I need to do work with him so I can spend time with him. And two, I need to find a way to go home. So I'm doing all this work, time and energy, giving, pouring my heart and soul into community. Why not pour it into my own communities, right? So that was part of Stories from Home, but that would come later. So in 2015, we did the Motherhood and Performing Art Project. And then when the pandemic hit, we were at the beginning of creating Stories from Home, the live version, and then everything had to pause. And I needed to figure out a way to continue to pay the dancers who had blocked off chunks of that summer to be in rehearsal, because I figured that they were counting on that income to be able to make ends meet. So I wrote a million grants and worked really hard. We didn't have to let anyone go. I'm really proud of that. But at the time, I was thinking, how do I continue this work? And I had a colleague of mine say, well, it's perfect. Your piece is called Stories from Home. Everyone's stuck at home. So why not do something with that? So I created the Stories from Home COVID-19 Addendum, which is a series of dance films. There are 11 dance films. Act one are five films that I created with my son in our home in Tucson. And act two are the stories of the dancers. So we got to see the dancers' experience of the pandemic in their homes with the cast that was with us at the time. So we premiered those. We had showings of those. Those, they still exist in their round. And parts of those dance films are going to be included in the animation that precedes the dance with my son. And then when this project came around, I really resisted because pulling him out of school to tour with us is challenging. But again, I couldn't create this work without him.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing all that. I feel like motherhood is full of hard contradictions and things to reconcile together. And it's really inspiring to see how you're navigating that and how you can fold in your son into that creative work that you're doing. So thank you for sharing that. I want to go back to something you touched on earlier, which is some of the topics that you address in Stories from Home. On the website, there is a list of the issues that are being addressed, such as the Bracero program, loss of language, Nuevo Mexicano Creencia, questions to land and connection to land and ancestors, love of family, spiritual symbolism, the creation of the atomic bomb in Los Alamos, New Mexico, and its impact on the surrounding Nuevo Mexicano communities, and the experience of the Sephardim people during and after the Spanish Inquisition. This is a long list.
It is.
And I wonder how you went about identifying the topics that you wanted to include in the show, and then what was that process like to go maybe from an idea to performing it through dance?
That's a great question. So all Stories from Home is inspired by the oral histories of my family. In college, I did a postgraduate degree in Mexican American studies focused on the history and culture of New Mexico. So in that, I got to do oral histories with my grandma, my great aunts, and my great grandmother. So I had those in my back pocket. And then when my dad got sick and we knew he probably wasn't going to make it, I sat down and did an oral history with him. In all honesty, I could have probably done three or four more 2-hour conversations at least, because he had so much to say. And then afterwards he would bring up stories. I'm like, oh, I should have recorded that, right? But people respond differently when there's a video recorder camera in his face. So I had all that source material and I knew some of the stories, but I thought, what are the foundational stories in my family? What are the stories that are important for my son to know to shape his sense of who he is and where his family comes from. And so I looked at the touch points and the stories that were important to my family members, but that also important for me to share. And I also zoomed out a little bit and looked at the stories that we know in the Southwest that maybe aren't known in other regions. And as this work is touring nationally, what do I want to share about my family, but also the history of our place that isn't well known or that should be known? And by no means is this an extensive review, right? There's a cacophony of voices of communities and families in the Southwest, in New Mexico. This is one perspective, but it does. There are parallels to other people in the region and communities in the region because we do share a history. So that was how I went about doing that. I'll share a little bit about the dance Braceros, which is interesting because during the national premiere in Washington, D.C., I did get an email from someone very confused as to why I included this dance because that's not a Nuevo Mexicano story. That's more like a California Cesar Chavez story. And I said, well, that's why I included it, because actually there is a connection, at least in my family, that remains unknown and unseen. And I think it's important to share. My dad worked with the Bracero program in the early 1960s. He started at the age of 11, and through the age of 14, he would pick cantaloupe and watermelon in the fields of Yuma, Arizona, and Southern California. And he was from Santa Fe, and his family was from Santa Fe, and they would follow the harvest. So they'd leave from Santa Fe, go to these cities in Southern Arizona, Southern California, and then go back to Santa Fe. My grandfather, who I never met, he passed away before I was born. His name was Adolfo Montoya. And he worked with the Bracero program because he was bilingual and they needed people that could talk to both the bosses of the farms and the Mexicanos who were coming across the border. The job didn't pay well. And so he sent his sons to work in either the cannery when they were old enough or the fields to pick to help support. So my dad said he got special treatment because he was the boss's son. But he did pick in 110, 120 degree weather with that program. And so that's a Nuevo Mexicano story. There's a point of connection there between New Mexico and other parts of the Southwest that I think isn't understood or isn't known. The process of creating that dance, when my dad was giving his oral history, I video recorded it, which I didn't do with my great-grandmother and great-aunts and grandma because that wasn't an option technologically at the time. Or if it was, the university system wasn't like super jazzed about it. So we did the old school tape. But with my dad, he was doing these gestures with his hands and looking off in the distance as if he was remembering. His body remembered the movement that he did when he picked in the field as a young boy. And he recreated that as he was telling me. He did the actual movements. And that is the basis, the inspiration for the choreography for the entire dance.
The Bracero program was an agreement between the U.S. and Mexican governments that permitted Mexican citizens to take temporary agricultural work in the U.S. Although it ended in 1964, it did set the stage for the current immigration patterns. You are listening to Where We Meet, a show of Taos Center for the Arts. I'm Alice Morillon in conversation today with choreographer Yvonne Montoya. Here is Montoya sharing on the collaborative elements of her latest and currently touring work, Stories from Home.
So the piece itself, the dance performance, is my family's stories. It's a sharing of my family's stories and my family's history. However, there are different moments in which other stories are brought and shared in conversation with that. When we tour in certain communities that are interested, we invite local community members to come and share their stories from home because we think it's important for this work to be in conversation with the places where we are. So we recently did that in Douglas, Arizona, and in Agua Prieta, Sonora, Mexico. We invited two dance groups to share their stories from their community. And through the workshops that we're doing this week, we're creating a Taos story from home with local artists. And so that will be performed on stage with the larger performance of Stories from Home on the 21st. And then we're doing a sneak peek of it on Friday as well to get some rehearsal and some stage time under our belt. So the Taos stories from home will be in conversation with the larger work at that time. So that's one of the ways in which we're bringing in other voices. And then we do a storytelling workshop that accompanies the piece. So everyone that comes into that gets to share their stories from home.
Wow, that's wonderful. I love the idea of bringing the stories from home, where you go, and grounding your work in those communities. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit of what Stories from Home maybe feels like, just for people who are listening to our conversation right now. You're sharing that this is an embodiment of oral history. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that sound like when you're performing it?
So I really wanted to find out and explore where these stories live in my body, because I recognize that New Mexico, specifically Northern New Mexico, has a really deep, rich tradition of oral history, not oral histories necessarily, an oral tradition, right? We share stories, we can talk for hours. I loved hearing the stories that my dad and my great grandma, my elders would share. They were so rich and so deep. And the art of sharing those stories and telling those stories is so important. So one of the things that I question is, where do these stories live in my body? And if so, where? Where are my feeling stories? Where are the unspoken stories hidden and held in the body? Is it time to share those yet? What are the things we don't say? What are the stories that we don't pass on, but they're there and we feel them? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a mix, there's a range in this piece. You'll feel power and joy and pride and sadness and loss and love and cadencia. And in some of those stories where it's coming across through the body and we feel that connection, we may feel and sense some of those unspoken stories that are below the surface.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to feeling all of that. I want to shift the conversation a little bit and talk about Sapphos. In 2009, you funded that dance company with Michelle Orduña. Can you tell us why you chose that name, Sapphos?
Yes, absolutely. So Michelle's a dear friend of mine, and she's not an artist. She will say that adamantly. She's an arts administrator, and she believed in my vision. And prior to starting Sapphos, I was dancing with other companies in Tucson. I no longer dance. I retired from dance in 2017, but I do talk on stage a lot. And she saw my struggle. My work in other companies where I was choreographing was not well received and was also at a time censored. And I felt like I needed a place to take artistic risks and have my own voice be explored. And I was in a very creative moment in my life. My son was 9 months old. So I heard that, like, after you give birth, you have all this creative energy. Her son was also like maybe 11 months old. Our kids were really young. And we decided to start this company, which, looking back on it, was like really crazy. But but we did. And the name Sapphos, we went back and forth with the first board of directors on what to call ourselves. And it actually comes from the term con Sapphos. And we use the definition in the Bursiaga book, Drink Cultura. And it comes from the C and the dash and the S that the Chicano muralists will put on the mural. And it means, you know, you don't have to understand my worldview or my art, just please respect it. And we thought that sentiment, especially at that moment in time and what we were going through artistically in Southern Arizona, where I live and work, that was important for us to convey.
Along with what you just shared, on the website it says that this company was funded to provide a space for dance artists with the aim of moving towards racial, ethnic, and geographic equality in dance. That's a large mission for a dance company. And I wonder what you think arts and specifically dance can do to enforce social matters today in 2024.
When I enter the national dance space, which is predominantly New York with some West Coast cities, in the concert dance, it's really San Francisco, maybe Portland, Seattle, because LA is much more commercial. I mean, the Southwest, I mean, right? We're flyover states. What are you talking about? So there's just like this whole like, there's nothing there, right? There's this idea that there's a sense that like there's nothing coming from these communities. Also, when you go, you know, I heard someone say this when I was younger in my 20s, and I knew there was a sentiment because I'd heard people talk about it. But, you know, I was in D.C. for one of the first couple times I've been there, and someone turned to me and said, oh, there's no history in the Southwest or the West in general. And I was like, oh, my goodness, man, Manifest Destiny really erased it. Actually, not true. There's a lot of history here. So, I mean, I think just creating work that's based in the Southwest and the aesthetics and even just sharing these family stories is a radical act, because the erasure of the history of this region once you step outside of it. And I think, again, having lived outside of New Mexico and seeing how it's so well known here and we're so grounded in who we are and in our place and in our cadencia, and we know where we come from and we know who we are. And then outside of that, everyone's like, we don't get it. We don't get it. What are you talking about? Oh yeah, Santa Fe's sexy, but we don't get it. So I think that just that in and of itself, just me going on stage and talking about my great grandmother is a radical act, because we don't see that. Also, when I was coming up, narrative in postmodern dance was a huge no-no. Like, that's narrative, that's passé. That's not high, quote unquote, high aesthetic at the time in dance. That was very much looked down upon. The other thing that was really looked down upon aesthetically was the use of face, because somehow in postmodern contemporary dance, there was this idea that you need to say everything with the body and the face shouldn't have any type of expression. And I was like, when did we disembody the face from the body? Isn't that part of the body? And so to this day, I get elder dance artists that will push back because my dancers have expression in their face. And so just those things in and of itself. But I think the other thing is there are brilliant artists throughout the Southwest, brilliant dance artists, very talented individuals. A lot of them are working in isolation because there isn't connection across geographies. In the Southwest, we're often separated by large swaths of mountains or deserts. And so the connection, the coming together, the building of a community so that we can share work with each other, give each other feedback, learn, grow together, that's missing. So the idea of convening and bringing people together, I think, is really important. So we can talk about, well, what does artistic excellence mean to you? What does artistic excellence mean to us as a community as a whole? How do we define that? And then share that with the rest of the dance community and say, this is what we see as valid, as important. That is also missing from this area. And then there's a lot of really talented dance artists that don't have access to dance studios because there might not be one in their town, or there might be one, but it's not economically feasible because dance classes are expensive, especially if you're getting something like ballet and the shoes and you wear them out and they're really pricey. And then, so looking at the talent, where do we put the very talented individuals who start late, which some dance schools will look at and say, oh, you don't have, you know, 8 years of ballet, you can't audition for this program, and they're insanely talented. So I specifically like to work with dancers who started late because I think they bring a different perspective. My dance training growing up was spotty because my parents couldn't always afford to send me to a dance studio. And it wasn't until I went to college where I could do the dance training consistently. Mm-hmm. And by then, I definitely had choreographers saying, you're too old. Mm-hmm. So I think that just creating a space for people in the Southwest to share their stories and to bring us together to have a conversation about who we are and how we want to show up on the national level, and letting dancers here know you should be writing those regional national grants. You should be going for those big fellowships. We need more representation from the Southwest. We need more voices from this region in those conversations. I think that's a step in the right direction.
Stories from Home has received significant awards, including an NEA grant, the Kennedy Center Residency Program, and many Arizona-based funding and grants. It obviously reflects the quality of your work. Would you also say that it reflects a shift in the understanding of the importance of presenting those stories of Nuevo Mexicanos, Chicanos, Chicanas, Mexicans? Do you think there's a shift at a national scale that it matters that this is shared.
Yes, I think that funders realize that they have not been resourcing this region, and this was an opportunity to crack open that door. And so I'm hopeful that there's a cacophony of dancers that come after that go for all of those grants and get the support that I did, so we can continue to create a robust community here in the Southwest.
I want to wrap up this conversation by asking you two things. One, if you have anything that you want to share with our listeners related to this current body of work, or just the overall work you're doing, social work you're doing through your artistic work. And two, if you're working on anything new, or if right now you're really focused on Stories from Home.
That's a great question. There's two dances that I want to share that may or may not resonate with the Taos community, especially the Nuevo Mexicanos here. I do have a dance about the Americanization programs that came in the 1940s and the loss of the Spanish language and the impact on me and my family. And I think that piece might resonate because I'm assuming there's similar stories here. When we go to different communities in the Southwest, we tend to find, we did the dance in Silver City, and we found people in the audience that had similar experiences. We did in Socorro. We had people in the audience whose grandparents experienced being punished and suspended from school for speaking Spanish to a janitor. So I think that might be a story that resonates. And then you mentioned briefly Los Alamos and the Pajarito Plateau. I am the third great granddaughter of Norberto Roival and Sofia Vigil, who were homesteaders on the Pajarito Plateau and were evicted in 1943. And then after that, three generations of my family worked in Los Alamos, some of them at the lab. My dad did, and later was diagnosed with cancer as a result of exposure. And so that is another dance and another story that I share that I think is really important, especially because recently the Oppenheimer movie came out, and the stories of the indigenous peoples and the Nuevo Mexicanos in the area and the impact that it still has is not reflected in that movie. So I like to think that this dance is in conversation with that and sharing a perspective of someone whose family has deep roots in the area and is from the region. So I think that those, I just wanted to highlight those two dances. In terms of what I'm working on, aside from the beautiful choreography that we're co-creating with the Taos community this week, which I'm so excited about, everything is like laser focused Stories from Home. I actually, in the car ride up here yesterday, the dancers were asking, hey, are we going to dust off some of these other pieces that we tabled? Some of these like fun, exciting pieces. I'm actively looking for commissions to keep my creative juices flowing as we continue to work on and tour Stories from Home, which we will tour through 2026.
Stories from Home will be performed at TCA on Sunday, April 21st at 6 p.m. Tickets are available online at tcataos.org. Thank you to Yvonne Montoya for sharing her thoughts and work. Where We Meet comes from Taos Center for the Arts in Taos, New Mexico. Producers include Chelsea Reedy, Anna Forster-Smith, and myself, Alice Morillo. On Where We Meet, we share conversations from New Mexico and beyond. Thanks for listening. Be well.